Today's episode is brought to you by Geek Fuel, a great subscription box service that ships out a mystery box each month that has at least $50 worth of value for just $15 plus shipping and handling. Every box has an exclusive t-shirt, a full downloadable game, and 5 to 7 other great geek culture items. Start your subscription today and get a free bonus item worth $10 in your first box by heading to geekfuel.com/wordballoon. This is a great Christmas kind of gift that would be wonderful for yourself or someone you know. Geekfuel.com/wordballoon. Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Sutris here. Great conversation today, perfect for Christmas time. We are sitting down with Paul Dini. Paul, as you know, the creator of Harley Quinn, longtime Batman writer, longtime animation writer in so many different shows. Currently, we can see Paul's work in Justice League Action, the new Cartoon Network show that's just started last week. And Paul has got a lot of stories coming up on that show, apparently. He was telling us in the interview about a lot of ideas that came up between him and Alan Burnett. We talk a lot about DC animation. We also talk about Paul's Christmas character, Jingle Bell, a very funny character that Paul created. Man, I can't believe about 25 years ago. And there's a new collection called Jingle Bell, the Full Package from IDW that collects all the great Jingle Bell stories. But we can't help but talk about Christmas stories in general. Paul, again, has written a lot of great ones. He is part of the DC Rebirth Holiday Special and talks about the story that he created for that. And also, we talk about a couple of Batman Christmas stories, in particular, one of my all-time favorites that he wrote for Detective Comics with the artist Don Kramer involving Tim Drake being captured by the Joker and the two of them driving around on Christmas. It's pretty neat, and it's a pleasure to talk to him about that. You know, I completely forgot that Paul is such a big gaming writer and has written all of the great Batman Arkham games of late. And because I asked him, you know, hey, how you feel about Harley Quinn kind of getting tarted up for the Arkham games? And he's like, well, I wrote them. And it's like, yeah, of course you did. What can I say? The runner stumbles every now and then. But I really am glad to have talked to Paul about his thoughts on what has really been Harley Quinn's big year, 2016. And also some other things that came out as well. Really great conversation today with Paul Dini on Word Balloon. And I'm proud to bring it to you right now. So without further ado, let's get into our conversation with Paul Dini on Word Balloon. Really pleased to finally get a chance to talk to Paul Dini. Man, a longtime admirer, Paul, and met you a couple times at conventions years and years ago. Wizard Chicago, I think even before I was doing the podcast. But thanks for coming on Word Balloon.
Oh, yeah, that's going back a while.
There you go, man. But no, but it's a pleasure to talk to you today, and especially about the new Jingle Bell collection from IDW. Everything under one roof in this volume?
Pretty much. There was one story that we left out because it was so long. It was like over 100 pages. And we're looking to do that separately. And the reason we didn't include that was we shot it from the pencils, and it looked great. Because it was an interesting way of going with the look, but I think we are under the consensus if we reprinted it again, we'd want to ink it in and color it and have the original artist, Jose Garibaldi, do it.
Wow.
So we withheld that one, but everything else is in there. So, and even some stuff that hasn't been seen really in print that we did for online.
You know, I was wondering, I was on your Facebook thread the other day, and I saw, or was it, yeah, I guess it was this weekend, Phil Noto production stuff. From,
yeah,
and I wonder, is that in the book as well?
No, that was sort of like a last minute thing. We kind of kept it to mainly the print stuff. That was also Phil very graciously did some conceptual work for a proposed Jingle Bell movie that was in the works for a while, and but those have been sort of lying dormant in my files until I just came across them recently and put them up there. He did a really fantastic version of Jing, and hopefully we can do something with those illustrations someday.
Yeah, man, they look great. And again, not to diminish the wonderful stuff that's in the collection as well, because you got a host of amazing artists. Do me a favor if you don't mind, like the inception of Jingle Bell, because certainly originally there was a real sistership, it seemed, between her and Harley.
Yes.
So who came first? Yeah, I mean, I don't remember who came first.
Harley Quinn came first. She came back around like 1991 or something like that originally, because the animated series debuted in 92, Batman the Animated Series.
Sure.
So I was writing scripts at least a year in advance of that. And so she was probably dreamed up in late 90 or early 91, because that was when we were writing all those episodes. And she just sort of happened along that time. And Jingle Bell was about 8 years later.
Oh, wow.
And so by then I'd been used to writing snappy blondes and, you know, funny girls and stuff like that.
Sure, man.
So,
sure.
But Harley was the first, and I had a long time working on her before I got to Jing.
Okay, and, you know, Jingle Bell is Santa's teenage daughter. And
yes.
Sometimes, you know, got that little bit of an Archie vibe if you make a comparison and stuff for people who haven't picked up Jingle Bell before. And, and certainly, again, you know, the father of Harley Quinn knows how to write, like you said, snappy dialogue and smart-ass blonde.
Yeah.
So that... So that's really cool, man. And, this has been a cool tradition. Man, I didn't realize, because I kind of came back to comics in the late 90s. And, I just kind of, maybe because of just the familiarity of the way your artists have depicted Jing, I just kind of felt like, oh, maybe, you know, this was something that's been going on for a really long time. Because it had that kind of, right from the moment, really good design, and just, it felt homey and comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of, thank you very much. I mean, there was a lot of that going into her inception, is that the idea that she had been around for a while, and I think it's such an eternal situation of the kind of loving antagonism between family members, and especially with her dad being Santa Claus and her having sibling rivalry with every other kid in the world, you know, for her dad's attention. I think there's a lot in there that sort of, struck a common chord. And also, you're right, I did go for kind of a feel of maybe a little like Archie Comics, or maybe like Harvey Comics grown up a little bit, because we don't have Harvey Comics anymore, but that's where they had a lot of the kind of like the fun comic takes on fantasy characters and things like that.
Definitely. Yeah. No, man, that's very cool and not surprising. It's and where would you be saying that, like, where would you put the readership for something like Jing?
I would put it squarely with the same readers that read like the Simpsons comics and maybe Mad Magazine early on, because we were with Oni Press and Oni was doing some new things and kind of some very unconventional stories. I think the dialogue with Jing was a little suggestive and a little adult in places. But again, I was trying to, you know, take the cute imagery of Christmas and set it on its ear a little bit.
Sure.
And I still like doing that. So I think that every once in a while, you know, like I'll hear from a parent or something who said, well, you know, their dialogue in here is not really kid appropriate. And it's like, yeah, well, maybe you should read it before you buy it for your kid. Because on the cover, Jing looks, you know, very cute and appealing. And I wouldn't say the dialogue is extremely over the top or vile or anything, but it is, it's teenage and it's designed to be funny and rude. And if you watch Simpsons or Family Guy, I think it's in line with that.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like a good kind of late junior high kind of age and early high school and stuff. I think that's the earliest, but obviously adults will appreciate it. And again, man, you get these great artists that just do that great combination. And I think we're close to the same age that we grew up with, that, you know, like the Tinkerbell innocence with just a little bit of sizzle. So the dad's like, hey, that's a pretty good looking drawing.
I mean, that's the idea. I mean, I'm meant to, excuse me, strong girl characters and everything like that, but also the fun and appeal of that look. I think that translates to a lot of people, and a lot of people enjoy that. And you mentioned Archie Comics before. We even had Dan DiCarlo, who was a great artist on Betty and Veronica and Sabrina and Josie, did one of the stories in there, which was a lot of fun to work with him on that.
Absolutely.
And and then we have such good artists like Bill Morrison and Stephanie Gladden, and they're all people who really love that cute style of rendering, and that, you know, very feminine, the fun feminine appeal of the character. So they really knock it out of the park when they do stories like that. It's a look, it's a style that I can't draw, but I like very, very much. And so I kind of turned Jingle Belle over to the artists for their version of how to depict her. There's a general way she looks, but beyond that, I tell all the artists just to go and have fun with it.
That's awesome.
And do what they feel the character brings out in them.
Absolutely, man. No, it's great. And I love that kind of kitsch aesthetic that you guys give it, all of you.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I'm wondering, I don't know if you caught it last Sunday. Did you watch those colorized Dick Van Dyke episodes that they showed on CBS? Did you know?
I saw a little bit of them. Yeah. Uh-huh.
For me, I got to say, it was fun because it really made like the sets come alive. And I mean, I see a little bit of that in the design too, when we see Jing just kind of hanging out and stuff like that. But it's got that like great kind of, you know, a little like retro vibe to it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely supposed to be a retro vibe to it because there is a retro vibe to all the Christmas specials that you see on TV now.
No question.
And that's a look that a lot of kids have in the last 30 years have grown up with because they really don't make those specials anymore. So we're seeing things from your childhood, from my childhood, and right up until all that look kind of stopped around 1974 or 75, because that's really when they stopped making Christmas specials to the great degree. Every once in a while they'll make a new one, but they don't have the snap of the old stuff, and they certainly don't have the visual spirit of the old stuff. So I guess I go for a look that was very vibrant when I was a kid, and that is that sort of late 60s kind of TV retro look for Jingle Belle and her world.
Yeah.
It's just a look that kind of sings to me and it is, yet it's sort of eternal at the same time.
I agree. That's funny, and that's a good observation too, because who knew the stuff we were watching when it was like almost brand new? I mean, I'm amazed. I guess I was born the day Rudolph debuted on TV.
Uh-huh.
And so I always really get excited when it comes on. It's like, hey, man, we're still the same age, and people still give a damn. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it really is. I mean, it's like that, and a little, it's interesting to see how that look survived. I mean, if you look at the movie Elf, it's very clear that Jon Favreau went back and looked at some of the color schemes and designs of the original Rudolph when he made when he came up with his image of the
sure.
North Pole for that and for Elf and also all those the Rankin Bass specials and even the
yes.
Peanut specials, the early ones,
definitely
had that sense of great design, which has lasted over the years.
As an animation guy, is that, you know, that kind of stop motion puppetry that Rankin Bass was known for and everything, would that, you know, have, and of course Ray Harryhausen and guys like that, would that ever appeal to you? Have you ever thought about and forgive me if you've already done something in that kind of format?
Well, in the Jingle Belle books, I actually did work with a local LA studio that does a lot of stop motion, and we created a Jingle Belle figure, and we did a little segment in one of the stories that's sort of narrated by that puppet, and we had her, you know, talking in a little kind of a puppet landscape, and it was fun to do that. But to actually do a whole special like that would be a huge undertaking to recreate the sets and the puppets and do all that. I'm not saying it's impossible, but we would have to have like a network TV budget in order to attempt something like that.
I understand. Well, and yeah, I just wondered if in general, I mean, I guess the Star Wars cartoons kind of with their rendering of if it's 3D or which, you know,
uh-huh.
what style, I guess they kind of recreate that feeling. I mean, it seemed to me that a lot of those character designs obviously kind of recreates that feeling.
Yeah, I think if I was going to do an animated jingle special, I'd like to do the style I think that is most appealing would be to try and do something in the style of Chuck Jones's Grinch, you know, How the Grinch
sure.
Stole Christmas, and
Absolutely.
Do a traditional cell animation. Because I think if you have the time and the budget, that you can do so much with the emotion of the characters through the actual drawing. And then kind of miss when you're doing CG, especially on a TV budget. I think that CG is like the most cost-effective way of going now because everybody's doing it. But I haven't liked a lot of what I've seen when people do, especially human characters in CG animation. They can move and they can open their mouths and stuff, but that's about it in a lot of cases. And I would really like to get in there and kind of rework some of the more dynamic elements of Jingle Bell into traditional cell animation and do it that way. Because I watched one Christmas special not too long ago, and they had the rendering of the characters in CG, and it looked very good, you know, because they were doing classic characters. But then they showed some of the storyboard illustrations, and they just blew them off the page because of the emotion was so clear in the pencil drawings. So I would go back to traditional 2D and do that. But I think in order to do that, I'd almost have to put together a small strike force in an animation studio and take a year and a half to do it because I'd want the animation to look that crisp.
God, I could, you know, I have a feeling that we could spend 2 hours just on your thoughts.
Oh, yeah, sure.
At animation in particular, in terms of, you know, your beginnings to where we are today. And yeah, maybe hopefully a future conversation would be good that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that'd be great, man. Because, no, honestly, you're really, you know, your writing speaks for itself. The characters you've created have been really great. But honestly, yeah, like as someone who really has been one of the, from foot soldier to, you know, one of the big producers and stuff and really a guide to where to go and stuff. Yeah, you've seen it. You kind of seen it all, and you see where it's going.
Yeah.
Is the current stuff satisfying what you're doing? Are you enjoying what you're doing as far as writing and everything? I mean, God, I know you currently have been writing for some of the Marvel shows, right?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Well, the Marvel shows were a lot of fun. My tenure on them is over. So, it's been at least a year or so since I've worked on any of those shows, but I know they are still running and reinventing themselves. I'm not quite sure what they've got in the works right now, but I know that they're still doing a bunch of shows over there. Recently, I worked on the new Justice League action show that is coming out on Cartoon Network. They just premiered some episodes, and I think they're starting into their regular run this Saturday morning. And that was a lot of fun to work on.
Excellent. Fantastic. I talked to Heath Corson about a couple of his stories.
Uh-huh.
Now, compare that kind of pacing. I mean, obviously, you did Batman the Animated Series. Did you write episodes of Justice League, the old classic run back in... You know, classic run, isn't that funny?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it seems like yesterday. Yeah, quite a few of those. That was a lot of fun. Not as many as I did on Batman. I was working on other shows around that time, and I would come in and write, you know, occasional episodes when they needed one. But that one was more... I'd say it was a little more labor intensive because it was such a bigger show and the stories were more complex and more involved. And it took a lot more, more to get the stories working on that one. With Justice League Action, when I was working on the show, I was just working on the show with myself and Alan Burnett. And we were just kind of, it was early on in the show's development, and we were just kind of flying by the seat of our pants, and I was just writing episodes and handing them in. And the only rule was that they had to be on the short side. I couldn't go on and on with the page count because then I'd have to go back and cut them and to keep it fast and keep it funny. And so in my mind, I just imagined like I was writing the second half of a regular Justice League episode. Like we've had the build up and a lot of the plot and everything, and now we're starting in the middle of Act Two and going through the big finale scene in Act Three. And how do you work it? How do you get to that point? And then how do you cast it with the DC characters, the appropriate DC characters, and make sure everybody has a fun and fresh voice? And that can be kind of daunting, but to me, most part, it was kind of easy because I know those characters so well, and I have a kind of shorthand of what they might think or say. So I found that show to be very fun to write, and for the most part, pretty easy.
That's interesting because it would seem that it's easier to come up with character moments that are unique versus, okay, we got to do another battle scene. And certainly you can replace villains and things like that, and they're a classic, I suppose, battle moves.
Uh-huh.
But, to write, they're like 10-minute stories, right?
Yeah.
Something around that, about that?
Yeah, 10, 11 minutes.
So, yeah. So did you and Alan were able to come up with, like, you know, different battle scenarios? I mean, again, for that long to have spent with different action shows as you have and everything, you know, is it, you know, coming up with a new complication for the Justice League? Is that sounds like it was easy, or maybe it wasn't?
Well, early on, it was more like, the attitude we took was, well, what if this happened? Or what if that happened? And it was almost like you take what's really well known around about the DC characters and you go, you come up with an interesting scenario. And you go like, well, what if Batman had to fight the Batmobile? And it's like, well, that's kind of an interesting idea. How do we get there? And then it's like Batman is pitted against the Batmobile that turns on him and attacks him. And it's like, okay, let's wrestle with that idea a little bit. Or what if Superman was affected by kryptonite in this way? And you're going to go like, oh, hey, that's kind of a cool idea. Let's play around with like that. Or what if Mr. Miskus Pitlick shows up and does this to people? You know, and then suddenly, because they're not big involved stories, they're more like incidents. Mm-hmm. You can actually expand those into bigger stories and really find the fun in them, and then cast them with some interesting people, what if Superman has to, you know, his powers are out and he has to hitch a ride with Space Cabbie? You know, that was one of the first ones we did. And he's defending a prisoner and from somebody who's trying to kill the prisoner. So you have, he's defending somebody who's kind of a villain, and the worst villain is after them. So that was sort of a natural. That was one of the very first ones we worked on. And so I would just come up with these kind of weird, like, what-if scenarios. And we'd cast them with just about any character in the DC universe because we had access to all of them, at least 150 of them. And so it was a chance to bring in some really obscure characters and some mix them with well-known characters and just sort of wink to the fans in a lot of ways about certain things that fans know and talk about and that have become common part of superhero lore. And I think that kids are going to love it because there's a lot of action and colorful characters. And fans are going to love it because there's nobody who are bigger fans of these characters than we are. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Alan Burnett, Jim Krieg came on as a lead writer and producer at one point, and then Butch Lukic has been our director. It's been storyboarded by everybody who worked on the animated series. I think James Tucker worked with Alan on the pilot episodes. And so it's just, everybody's been doing this stuff for a while. And The fact that we keep shaking it up and we're not doing the animated series or we're not doing the traditional Justice League series. Yeah, I know the fans would love those shows to continue forever, but when we do these new iterations, I think we're able to take what we've done well in other shows and things that we've learned and present them in new forms so that it's fresh and fun. Certainly for us, and then for the viewers as well. Best case scenario.
No, definitely, and truly, DC Animation, because of you guys, has really had this wonderful 25-plus years, I mean, 27, 28 years of just evolution. And that's the thing, man. You guys, somebody interviewed Jerry Lewis recently, and it was in the Hollywood Reporter. They put this big video out about how, man, Jerry Lewis is tough, and it's like so tough on interviewers. And it's like, no, but the guy doing the interview doesn't have the perspective to really give this subject what it needs, and forgive the lofty comparison. But that's the thing. I think you guys, I mean, you've been doing it so long that you've been allowed to evolve and stretch. And, you know, I mean, I was one of those guys with Teen Titans Go. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. And, of course, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you know, great that the original Teen Titans had its run. God bless them. But it's time for something new. And Teen Titans Go has proved itself. And, I mean, God, everything I see, I still haven't watched last Friday's Justice League action. I recorded it. I didn't have a chance to watch it yet.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, Heath was excited and you sound excited. So, no, I'm glad. And I know it's in good hands.
Yeah. So it's good stuff. There's a, you know, tremendous familiarity with the characters where I can go and leave them for a while. Like I worked on a lot of the early, I wrote about a dozen of the early episodes and then I left for a while. And then Alan called and said, you know, we have more of these. You want to write some? And it's like, sure. So, you know, sit down with him and Jim and we'll just go over some new story ideas. And it just, you know, you pick up where you left off.
This year has been obviously Harley Quinn's year. What, How's it felt watching? Because, you know, I mean, did you do any Harley-related stuff this year to support Suicide Squad or, you know, any of the attention that's going on right now?
Well, I did some stuff toward the end of the year. And when Suicide Squad opened, I wrote a couple of Harley stories that are just now seeing print. And, you know, I just sort of been watching it all happen and been very happy for the character and for the people involved working on her in different forms or another. And I just hope that it continues for a few years, because that character is really getting popular and certainly will become even more popular once she has her own solo movie coming out. It's kind of remarkable to see that she's reaching this sort of Mickey Mouse level of popularity. And
true.
Well, you know, you have to say, yeah. I have noticed that you look at Deadpool, Harley Quinn, and Mickey Mouse, and they're all colored the same way. They're all in red, black, and white. Mickey's got a bit of yellow on him, but maybe there is something about those very primary colors that you first see as you first begin to recognize that those are something that's automatically, you know, burns themselves into your brain. Also, it could be they're just really good characters. So, but it has been fun watching her take off in, excuse me, in Suicide Squad and DC Superhero Girls, and just everywhere there's a little bit of her. It only sank in on me recently how firmly she's become ingrained in the public consciousness. I mean, you know, the movie is one thing, but there was a clip of on Dancing with the Stars of two of the dancers dressed like Harley and the Joker, and I'm going, like, they're that iconic now. They're that much of a couple in the public's mind that you can do Harley and the Joker and people know what you're talking about. And for 20 years, geeks have known about it, and cosplayers and fans and everything. But when Mr. and Mrs. Mom and Pop America watching Dancing with the Stars get it, then it's like, oh, okay, all right.
That's pretty cool. Now, what did you – I am interested, because I'll confess, I obviously was part of the group that when DC Entertainment, maybe for the computer games, maybe it was the Arkham games where they first kind of tarted up Harley and kind of the hot pants and everything. You know, it wasn't like, you know, my childhood was crushed, and it is their characters to do with what they wanted, but this is your creation. And obviously, again, you did it as a work for hire, but that initial response, was it like, oh man, what are you doing? Or like, no, cool, do it.
What, for the Arkham games?
Yeah.
Oh, I did and that. I did it. I wrote those games, so I was
oh,
I was
and wondering. So you were on board for the tart up, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, within reason. I mean, I said, you know, let's. I mean, the attitude we were taking is like, okay, she's in. There's a rebellion in Arkham Asylum. The Joker is brought in. A lot of the villains are just sort of released, wearing whatever they're wearing. And let's have Harley. And Harley was working for him on the inside. So, yeah, her jester outfit didn't seem quite as appropriate here, and almost like putting her in the nurse's outfit was like mocking the authority of the doctors and the guards. And it seemed to be kind of a fun way of going with her. Also, you're dealing with a bit more of a realistic look, so let's play with it a little bit. There was some more extreme stuff with her that I did raise an eyebrow at, and the designers did tone down a little bit. But, you know, what we got through was pretty racy. But, because it was such a different change in look from what we'd done before, I was okay with it.
That's cool. My face is red, Paul, because obviously millions of people know the games a lot more than they know the comics. And I'm unfortunately one of those old guys that can't handle a PlayStation-like controller. And every time I've ever played the game, I got Batman basically circling, just walking in circles and stuff. And I'm like, all right, I can't do this.
Yeah, that's what I do. I just like playing Batman. I don't want to actually fight anybody. I just want to walk around and fly off buildings and stuff like that.
Exactly.
I'm much rather watch a story than go through it. But it has been fun, you know, charting his adventures through a game and working with the design team on that and things like that.
Does the gaming community? I mean, again, you're a rock star in the comic circles and in the animation circles. You know, does the gaming community have that response to you as well?
I think the gamers do. It's a lot of people who've enjoyed the games have come up and said how much they've loved the stories on the games and and things like that. I think that I'm afforded perhaps a bit more attention than would be due on a situation like that, simply because I have the title of writer on the games. There's a lot more effort done by a lot more people who go in and actually animate the characters and create the look of the game that that should be celebrated as well. I mean, I'm very happy and very proud about the work I do, and every time I work on one of those games, I make sure that it is something different than the comics, the cartoons, and that it is its own game world and its own game experience. You know, it really is a collaborative effort by a lot of different people. I'm very grateful for the attention, but and very proud of the work I did on those games, and they certainly are fun, though.
They certainly are. They're fun to watch. I'll tell you.
Oh yeah.
That's kind of what I did. It's like, all right, let the guy who knows what he's doing play, and I'll, you know, I even watch those YouTube videos of somebody playing the game well.
Isn't oh yeah.
That crazy that that's a thing now too. I just think that's amazing, and maybe people are watching for the technique, but on Injustice and the Arkham games and stuff. Yeah, I'm like, actually, I want to watch the story. I kind of want to see what they did here because it looks cool.
Yeah, somebody actually asked me about that if I would consider doing that, like. Yeah, can we film you playing the game and do like a little episode of that?
Or a commentary show?
Yeah. You know, and people watch me as I play the game, and I'm going like, no, I don't play the game very well. I mean, how about I'll in the next time I write one, how about you put a camera in and I'll write it? You know, you can film me writing it.
Over the shoulder, that's fantastic.
Yeah, okay, Batman runs down an alley. Says to Joker, it's over, Joker. Oh, okay, Batman runs down the alley from the left side, says, I've got you, Joker. Batman runs, swings down from the top. Yeah, it's a thrill packed. It'll be a thrill packed experience, I'm sure.
Yeah, but with the keyboard though, then you're like Clark Kent writing a story or something.
Yeah.
Like that, so actually,
and then we'd have a pop up of fans commenting as I write, saying, "No, don't have him do that. Have him do this."
Epic fail.
Yeah.
Stop what you're doing. Hilarious.
Yeah. Worst game awesome. Ever. So it would be.
You know, you did kind of do something like that a couple of years ago with Kevin Smith. Not really, but when you guys were spitballing ideas for Gotham on his podcast, that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That was fun.
Believe me, you know, all the Bat fans were like, these are good ideas. Somebody ought to be writing these down. This is a good one.
Yeah, I think somebody did. Yeah, it was fun to do that, but that's the sort of thing. Yeah,
it was a nerd conversation. You know,
it's interesting when you get two guys who love the characters, you know, tossing out ideas. You know, you're going to get some good ideas, and then I think a lot of people wanted to hear how that was going to work out. But the fact of the matter is these are characters that are owned by other people, and they have other plans for them and other destinies planned for them, and. There's always going to be some overlap because if you're thinking about these characters nonstop, you're going to basically hit on every idea that was ever done.
Sure.
Yeah, but you know, Batman is for the most part such familiar territory. If I was going to do anything with a character, I'd rather it be a less well-known one, and then see if there's a way I could bump him up into like a major player, like a Batman.
Without everything you've written, have you pursued live action? Because, God, I mean, again, I have so many adult friends when the animated series came out and also Justice League that are trying to explain to their wives, look, I know it's a cartoon, but these are really good stories, and these are really like they're treating the characters like an adult thing, and that's why I'm watching this. And then the wives will watch and go, okay, I get it. You know, it's like, you know, they weren't comic book fans, but they saw what the effort you guys put in. But is live action is that something you're pursuing? Or
oh yeah, definitely. I've been working pretty hard toward that, and I've had experiences with that in the past and working on various live action shows. I worked on Lost the first season. And then I created a show for Cartoon Network, which a lot of fans still like and remember, but it came out at a time when they bought the show, Cartoon Network was making the sort of bold foray into drama for kids, live-action drama for kids as a way of varying what they put on their schedule. And we got into production. We were about halfway through production, and then they decided, we're not going to do that anymore. And we had already finished the episodes, so we finished up the episodes. They ran them once on TV and then buried it. So,
wow.
But the fans who saw it loved it, and it really was. And it was way ahead of its time because it had that binge-watching quality where you really wanted to find out what happened from one episode to another. And we had some really good writers working on it. And for a while, I guess they ran it on iTunes. And to this day, I get like 3 or 4 fans tweeting me every day saying, finish the story or come back and tell the story. And even Cartoon Network says, yeah, we get letters about it all the time. But you know what? We're Cartoon Network, and we're never going to go back into live action like that. So it's unfortunate because that really was a show that would have been up there as far as like a Marvel show, as far as the binge watching goes, like a Daredevil or a Power Man or something.
What was the name of that show again?
It's called Tower Prep.
Yes, it was it was set in an academy and stuff. Remember when that thing came out. Yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Oh, smart, but at the wrong time. Timing. Isn't that TV, man? Because you're right. I mean, that is the thing now. God, you know, you look at a Fox show like Profit back in the late 90s. Would have been a binging kind of show like that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, well, that's good, man. Well, keep pitching. And
All you can do is learn from your mistakes and try and find another supplier and come up with other ideas. So, and I'm in the process of doing that now. So hopefully I'll have something to talk about this time next year.
Fantastic, man. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of like the oversaturation now of TV? Because there literally is too much good TV to watch.
Well,
human.
I miss half the stuff that's out there, and because you want to make a commitment to find out about these shows, and they do have that addictive quality. I guess if I did nothing on the weekends other than watch a show, I could watch. You know, when my wife and I sit down and watch a show, like we watch Luke Cage, and it took us, let's start on Friday and let's go till Sunday, and because you got to take a break and walk the dogs and eat something and everything. But it really is addictive to just sit in front of the TV and just watch and watch and watch, and then you realize, like, oh God, it's a year and a half before they make any more. What am I going to do? Oh, hey, here's another show over here. I'll watch that. So it really has changed the way that the TV works, and it's made me really impatient for the next episode. For instance, when I heard that, and I think fans are feeling this way too, when they were they're airing Justice League at 7:30 on Saturday mornings, and that's nice to have a Saturday morning cartoon back again. But when you realize it's only like 15 minutes and it's every week, and there's so many of these episodes lined up ready to go, it's like, can't you at least run 2.5 hours?
Really?
Yeah.
You're right, man.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I'm looking at your IMDb page, and there's a series called Arkham Tales of the Dark Knight.
I have no idea what that is. I see that before. I think somebody just posted something that's a phony.
Hilarious.
And once you post something on IMDb, whether it's true or not, it just stays up, because unless you can prove that it's not true, it just stays up there. But I saw that, and I'm going like, I don't know what that is.
See, that's that fake news that I'm dealing with in politics. I understand it.
Yeah. There you go.
Jeez. Yeah, sorry.
Fake news in politics. Yeah, we gotta change that.
Hey, man. Breitbart was picking on the geeks long before they started picking on. Well, they were doing it, I think, at the same time as they were picking on Democrats and everything. So.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I don't. Don't worry, man. We're not gonna go there.
That's fine. Anyway, it's people post things that are just, you know, made up, or they'll, yeah, I have no, I saw that on IMDb. I have no idea what that is. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, I just wanted to cover anything that might've been in production that you might be involved with, but there you go. You heard it here, folks.
Ironically, there's plenty of stuff that is in production that's not up there that I haven't announced, but you know, that the real stuff doesn't get up there until, you know, till much later.
Right. Till it's close to airtime and everything.
Yeah.
No, that's cool, mm-hmm. man. Let's take a pause and talk a bit more about our sponsor, Geek Fuel. Geek Fuel is a great subscription box service that ships out a mystery box each month that has at least $50 worth of value for just $15 plus shipping and handling.
Every box has an exclusive t-shirt, a full downloadable game, and 5 to 7 other great geek culture items. For instance, my box has a great Firefly Serenity t-shirt, a cutting board for your kitchen that's shaped like a Nintendo game cartridge, a cool Dragon's Egg shaped toothbrush holder, and a whole lot more. This is a great last-minute Christmas gift or even buy for yourself, and you'll have several holiday and birthday gifts to share with friends and family for months to come. You'll get an extra item as well if you go to geekfuel.com/wordballoon to start your subscription today. Consider it. It's a lot of fun, and it's great surprises each month, but also fitting that great geek lifestyle that we all love. Geekfuel.com/wordballoon.
Well, back to Harley, because I got to say, I really loved what and they're still doing it, what Jimmy and Amanda have been doing with Harley.
Oh, yeah, sensational.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder if you feel the same way. It reminds me of Little Annie Fanny in its kind of satire of society and everything.
Yeah, every once in a while a character comes along where you can really exploit the foibles of society, and the rest of the book or the universe as seen through that character doesn't need to be so serious. Certainly something like Ambush Bug way back in the day with DC was like that. Going farther back, Howard the Duck by Steve Gerber over at Marvel Comics.
Oh, yeah.
He was sort of a good social barometer and, a character who was always lampooning the idiocy of society and stuff like that. And so it's fun to see them do the same thing with Harley.
Definitely. That's cool, man. And are you in the holiday special right now, the Christmas special?
Oh, yeah.
From DC?
Oh, yeah.
What's your story? Forgive me.
Well, I do the wraparound story, which has Harley in it, and it's called Harley, a very Harley holiday. And so it really shatters the fourth wall in that she walks out there very much like Linus in Charlie Brown Christmas out on stage. She's even wearing Linus's outfit and says, "Lights, please." And the lights come down, and then she narrates the opening of the special, saying that they wanted to do something really amazing at this time of year, and that's usually like the Task Force X Xmas party, but they drank up all their budget on St. Patrick's Day, so they can't have a big party, so they throw a big TV special instead. And it's got all the DC characters wandering around like it's the Dean Martin holiday special. Just having drinks and talking and chatting by the piano, and Harley's kind of in the middle of it all. There's no action. It's just weird gags.
And, that's awesome. Did you draw that, or who drew it?
Oh, I'm going to get her name wrong. It was Elsa Chartier. I'm badly screwing up her last name, but she's a very fine French artist. She drew it, and she drew it, did a very, very fun a rendering of Harley and all the DC characters. And It's drawn not in an outright gaggy style, but a style that has a lot of character and a lot of really good acting in the poses and everything. There's a lot of good stuff in that book. A lot of really talented folks contributed very, very fun stories. And I think that's the takeaway from the book, is it's a lot of fun. It's fun to see Batman and Detective Chimps solving a Christmas mystery together.
That's Heath's story, yeah, Heath Corson's story.
So, yeah.
I'm definitely aware of that one. Haven't had a chance to go to the shop in a while, and was looking forward to that. And also coming out this week, Love is Love.
Yes.
W Anthology, and you're a part of that.
Yep. Mark Andreyko, who's a wonderful soul and tremendous talented artist. Writer. Put that together in the wake of the. In the wake of the Orlando, Florida shootings earlier this year. And I remember the inception of the book is that the day that it happened, he was home and he was, really bummed out over it. And it was Pride Day in Los Angeles. And he said he was too bummed out even to go there because of the shooting and because somebody was reported as bringing weapons to the Pride celebration. And Misty and I said, "No, you're coming, and we're going." And Misty said, "We're going over. We're going to pick him up. We're going to Pride Day." So she said, "Go on, get dressed, get ready. We're coming to get you." So we picked him up, went down to Santa Monica Boulevard, hung out, watched the folks parading, and had a day just getting our minds off the terrible situation. Went over to Shake Shack, had hamburgers, and. And even then, Mark was saying, somebody should do something. Somebody should put something together and somebody should say something and do something as a memorial. And that's when he hit on it, was doing it then, that he wanted to call people and put this together. And he's been working on it steadily for the last 7 or 8 months. And now we can see how it all comes out. And it's a beautiful-looking book.
I'm excited. I had a great conversation with him about it. And it's an episode that's one or two behind this conversation. It's amazing. And I'm really glad and not surprised that the community stood up and is like, you know, hey, you guys all got together, and women, and made this incredible anthology and did it for the right reasons. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really is something that comes from the heart, and it's going to appear that way, and it's really going to come across that way to anybody who picks up the book.
And what's your? Do you have a story in there?
I have a little short Harley and Ivy story, which was kind of done in the style of the old Peanuts books, like Happiness is a Warm Puppy or sure. Love is Walking Hand in Hand. It's just about, it just shows their relationship. Like love is the little things a couple will do when they're in love, little nice things they do for each other. So that it plays off that the idea that they have this little relationship going, and sure. it's very fun and sweet.
That's terrific, man. No, yep. That's great. And I'm, again, two reasons to go to the shop, man. The DC Holiday Special and Love is Love. And also
and the Batman. There's also the Batman Annual that I did a story in. That's actually a few weeks older. But
I'm
that
snacking
was the,
myself. Tell me about the Batman Annual.
Oh, absolutely. It's the Rebirth Batman Annual for this year. And it's got a wintertime theme to it. And it's got a lot of really, it's got Tom King and Scott Snyder and a lot of great current folks working on the Bat books, contributing stories. And I got to do a story with my childhood idol, Neil Adams. And we do a short Batman Harley story for the book. Thanks. So I grew up loving Neil Adams' work on the classic detective and Batman books and X-Men and Dead Man and everything that he did. And every time a Neil Adams book came out, I just grabbed like three copies of it and devour it. And the artwork is so amazing. And it just came up late this summer. Do you want to do a story? And I thought, you know, what would be fun is because they're dealing kind of with a Silent Night theme of for Batman. Neil did a story called The Silent Night of the Batman, where he basically takes a night off and Batman's image stops crime throughout Gotham City on Christmas
yes.
Eve. So we kind of revisit that idea with Batman and Harley together, and Harley's image kind of, you know, adding a note of happiness or throughout Gotham City, where it's most needed on Christmas Eve. And it's a very silly story, but Neil rendered it very beautifully. And if you like Harley, it's terrific. And it kind of sets the stage up for a bigger story he's doing with Harley. With Superman that comes out the end of this month that Jimmy and Amanda have going.
Wow, that's really cool.
So if you like seeing Neil draw Harley here, you're going to love it when it's the Harley versus Superman story at the end of the month.
That's really cool. And before I forget, Love is Love, you know, the proceeds go to, I'm telling the listeners, the victims of Orlando and also their extended families. And it's only $10. So many great people are in it. Listen to my interview with Andreyko. And we talk about, you know, even more creators that are involved. But it's incredibly – it's a great collection of people. And also they're digital exclusives as well. So
sure. I don't think you can give a better Christmas present to a loved one, to a friend, or even to yourself than the Love is Love book. It really is a very, very special work. And I can't wait to get my copy this week.
There you go. Hey, am I wrong in remembering you did an amazing – I mean, you did so many great one-and-done – stories during your run on Detective from a few years ago and Streets of Gotham and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What I remember in particular, though, is the story you did with Don Kramer where the Joker has Robin tied up next
yes.
to him in the car. And
yes.
wasn't that a Christmas story?
Or? It was a Christmas story. It was. It was a one-shot Christmas story about the Joker has just by pure luck managed to grab Robin in a moment where his guard was down. He's got him tied up with Christmas lights. He's driving him around town. And Joker is just like being his pal but he's really torturing him. And that's the Joker at his purest form. Is a guy, once he has you at his mercy, he's just Oh, he just loves it. He just delights in it and everything. And it's like, Robin, how do I get out of this? And it's what I sat down to write it, I was thinking, this is my version of the Briar Patch story. This is the classic old Brer Rabbit story. The fox has him, and there's no way out for him. And how does the rabbit get out of it? He's got to trick the fox into throwing him into the briar patch. And really, I really should have dedicated that story to Joel Chandler Harris, the Brer Rabbit stories. But I really was thinking of like, oh God, it's a briar patch story. All right, you know, so let's go with it. Let's see where we can get with it. But it really was fun putting him in that situation where Robin had to think and focus and to get out of this awful situation.
Man, I'll tell you, Don Kramer lives close enough to Chicago that I see him on a semi-regular basis. And even back then, I'm like, this is like literally one of the best Batman Joker Robin stories ever. And the fact that it was a Christmas story, because I'm laughing and you make the Briar Patch and Brer Rabbit comparison. But it's just this good straight up one shot Batman story that does have the Christmas backdrop. And it's like, you know, it's like, this is what the Christmas story should be. And not exclusively, because they, again, I think all of us growing up on this stuff, and certainly you guys that are making the books and the cartoons and stuff, you bring the fun that we had as kids, but now the stories are just a little more interesting and clever. That Neil Adams story, though, that you mentioned is certainly from the old days. But, you know, those are like exceptions. They really – I remember those Treasury edition size Christmas with the Superheroes kind of stories. And, you know, they were kind of hit and miss depending on what was in there and everything. And, no, it's nice to see. And yeah, that one, that detective story in particular, yeah, that's truly an all-time great, man.
Thank you. I mean, it is – and the fact that it is Christmas is even a little bit more perverse, because he's wearing a Santa hat. He's driving an SUV of a family that he killed, and they're in the back seat while they were off Christmas shopping. And he's running down people in the middle of the street and saying, oh, my God, that person just jumped out in front of me. Better back up and see he's okay. And he runs over him again.
Kind of flies in the face of my – now, that's what Christmas should be.
Yeah.
More death. More things like that.
Well, yeah, that to me is a Joker. Guy just driving around causing mayhem wherever he can and getting away with it. So
I get it, man. No, you nailed it. Earlier this year, you came out with a very serious Batman, a personal story that had the friendship of Batman and the villains around it and stuff. First, like, you sound like you're in good spirits. And, I mean, obviously, I'm sure as time moves on and stuff, it's easier to look back maybe and also just get on with your life, and clearly you're doing that.
Uh-huh.
But I it was beloved. I know that a lot of people really appreciated your coming forward with this very, very personal story and everything. And I had wondered if it maybe clouded your thoughts going into new Batman stories, but again, given what you've been doing this year, probably not.
Well, it was something I managed to sort of go beyond after the mugging. Was it did color my thinking a lot when it happened, and it just became a way. Telling stories also became sort of a survival mechanism, and it's over time I realized, look, there's really one thing you're really good at, and you want to be doing that, or you can't really be doing anything at all. And if you're really good at telling stories, go back and tell stories, because that's the only way to deal with this. That's the only way to get any sort of justice out of it, is to know that you can go back and tell the same sort of stories and even better stories that happened before this took place. Don't let this keep you from fulfilling whatever destiny you have in this world. And it was hard to get back in the flow of it, but once I did, over time, it became easier. And when I started writing the Dark Knight book 3 years ago, enough time had passed that I felt that I had I was able to tell that story in a more objective way than somebody who was in the throes of still dealing with it.
Understood.
And but luckily I was able to go back there and recapture a lot of the feeling and the emotions that I underwent when I was writing it, or when I was undergoing the experience. It was such a vivid experience that I guess there was no way I would ever forget any of it. And I had written down little bits of it throughout the years, So I was able to draw on it. And I thought, well, I'll do something with this someday. And fortunately, DC Comics gave me the chance to tell that story and deal with it and get it out of my head once and for all.
Well, it was to open yourself up like that. Honestly, I think a lot of fans appreciated it, and also, you know, I'm sure some relate to it and whatever crises they've had in their lives and stuff. So that's cool, man. I mean, it's one thing to write, you know, the fun fiction and everything like that, but you know, that was a real story, and it's good for you, man, for getting it out. And again, I'm glad people appreciated it, and I think they did, definitely. It sounded like it this year, given the amount of – I mean, I heard a lot of your interviews, man, and they were good, reading them and hearing them and stuff. And no, and I know that, you know, the emotion is still – well, like you said, it's obviously part of your life, and it's a part of your life, you know.
Yeah.
We're the sum of our experiences, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so – well, on to happier things.
Yeah.
Like Zatanna. I mean, you know, you always have such fun with Zatanna. Are we going to see anything new with you and her?
Let me see. What do I have coming out with her? She's in the holiday book. She's in the wraparound segments of the holiday book.
Oh, great.
Having
okay.
some fun with her and Black Canary. And so that's the latest thing. And beyond that, there is an anthology. They're doing a collection of the Zatanna stories that I wrote when I did the run on her book. And that, I just wrote the introduction to that last week. So that'll probably be out in March or April, I think. They're collecting
cool.
those. And that also includes a book I wrote way back when called Zatanna Everyday Magic for Vertigo. So this collects that Vertigo one shot along with her run in the DC comics.
That's
and,
great.
And then she shows up in quite a lot of Justice League action episodes that I wrote. So she's in about five or six of those, and among others. So she's really kind of a key member of the team this time around in the cartoon show. She's one of the key guys that Batman and Superman turn to when they have to deal with a situation involving a magical threat. So it was fun working with her and John Constantine and some characters that I had created for her book that I wove into the animated series, this new animated series.
That sounds great, man. No, I'm excited for that. All right, now, and I got one of these typical questions, but I am curious, given your knowledge of the DC universe, and it, again, pulling Space Cabby out for an episode, I'm very excited. Is there a character you haven't worked with yet that you're like, you know, I really would like to do an Inferior Five story or whatever?
There are a few. I mean, Inferior Five, that's a good one. it would be fun trying to dust them off way back when. I had a Sugar and Spike story that almost made it into Justice League Action this year, and it came along kind of late in the story process, and I pitched it to Alan, and he liked it, and I wrote up kind of a detailed outline about how to do it with them as, you know, Sugar and Spike as the little babies. And we just ran out of time, and we didn't have, we weren't able to do it the first go around, but maybe if we're picked up, I'll be able to do that then. And, you know, there are a few of them out there that I think it would be fun to work with. They're kind of popping out of my head at the moment, but, you know.
Well, I want you, yeah, absolutely. I could appreciate holding your cards to your chest too. And,
sure.
You know, absolutely. We can wait for the stories to come out, so that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years of your animation and comics career and, you know, television and the like and games, can you name a couple of the people that you go back to your 10-year-old self and be like, listen, I don't know if you know, but you're going to meet Stan Lee and that's going to be amazing. Or like, you know, is there a guy, you know, Chuck Jones? I'm sure those are obvious ones that maybe you did meet, I'm assuming through your animation career, or maybe not. Are there any, you know, big holy shit I can't believe?
Oh, I've been lucky enough to meet quite a few. I mean, going back to Jim Henson and
awesome.
Certainly Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, guys like that. I mean, tremendous people. You know, you find yourself sitting in a meeting with Tim Burton talking about something, you go like, oh my God, how'd I get here? And so I've been lucky enough to work with a lot of great people like that. And at one point, this is sort of funny. You mentioned Stan Lee. At one point, when I was working on the Spider-Man cartoons, Ultimate
sure.
Spider-Man,
yeah.
I was going to a recording, and I was at the recording studio, and they have a call box outside, and you buzz in. And so I hit the buzzer, and the person says, yeah. And I go, Spider-Man? And then I hear this voice behind me going, so you're Spider-Man. I always wondered. And I turn around, there's Stan Lee. And then you go, yeah, well, that costume hides a multitude of sins. So kind of, you know, it was very funny. And so it was like a funny moment to, you know, just you hang
That's
out, you
awesome.
Goof around with Stan Lee. I mean, we recorded a Joker episode for Justice League Action, and I'm sitting there with Mark Hamill, who I've known for years, and mm-hmm. watching him record and knowing that, and I wrote an episode just for him because it's the way he does Joker, and it's very particular to the way that he talks and that he thinks about the character. And it was fun watching him doing it. And then we posed for pictures afterwards, and we're both rocking these big old Jedi beards and everything. A lot of fun. And it's fun working with Mark because I'll put in jokes that I know that only he will get. And because he's such a fan of comedy and everything. And for instance, in this one story, Joker pops up suddenly behind somebody and they turn and Joker says, glad to see ya. And so Mark's reading goes, glad to see. Is that like Bilko? And I said, of course it's like Bilko. And he goes, because that was Phil Silver's trademark, you know, glad to see ya. So
oh, yeah.
he does it as the Joker, but he puts a hint of Bilko on it because to me, the Joker has a knowledge of all the great comedian shtick, and will use it occasionally. And you know, so does Mark. So just little touches like that, and just knowing that how he'll say a line or how how he thinks about the character, I'll sort of write to that when I write a Joker episode.
I got to tell you, man, and I would imagine is Alan Burnett that kind of collaborator too, where you guys know each other so well?
That, oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, is there like, are there other, you know, the circle of people like that that you just connect with and makes the material that much better?
Oh, yeah, you know, I was, yeah, it's just a very, you know, comfortable way of working. One day I was having lunch, I was going to have lunch with Alan and Jim Krieg, and I was just sitting down having some cereal, and I brought my sketchbook, and I started sketching in some ideas, and for whatever reason, I started sketching this weird gag scenario with Harley, and I was going like, oh, God, that's funny, and I sketched it up real quickly and wrote a, you know, like a three-point story. 2 hours later, we were having lunch, and I was saying, okay, Harley does this, and they both said, yeah, write it, and and that was our story meeting, you know, over enchiladas at a Mexican restaurant. I came in, and I go, and Harley does this, this, and this, and they go, yeah, okay, fine, yeah, you got 11 minutes, write it.
That's awesome. Well, you guys are the right men for the right job. I mean, that's the thing. The proof comes out in the end result. I really appreciate you talking today.
Sure, sure.
And truly, DC Holiday Special. I want to get the title of the Harley. There it is. The whole package. Jingle Bell. The whole package.
The whole package.
From IDW, and that is fantastic. 340 pages, kids.
Oh, man, it's more than that. It's a
lot.
There
you go. And you know, a really cute Stephanie Buscema cover.
Oh, she's wonderful. Yeah. There's some more of her artwork throughout the book. It's really great.
Outstanding. And looking forward to Justice League Action. It's if it's got your fingerprints on it, we know it's going to be good, man.
Oh, I'm laboring around in the background somewhere on that one. Yep.
And, yeah, looking forward to whatever – you know, comic and animation and television likely output that Paul Dini has for 2017, man. It sounds like it was a good year, and
yep.
I hope the same happens for you and Misty next year and everything. So truly, thanks for talking today.
Oh, thank you, sir. That was my pleasure. And you have a great holiday, all right?
That's Paul Dini. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Word Balloon. Merry Christmas, everyone. And to those who don't celebrate it, enjoy the weekend. We've got more great Word Balloons coming up before the end of the year. And really happy to bring them to you. So be sure to stick around because lots of great podcasts still to come before we say goodbye to 2016. Today's episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by Geek Fuel, a great subscription box service that ships out a mystery box each month that has at least $50 worth of value for around $15 a month, plus shipping and handling. Every box has an exclusive t-shirt, a full downloadable game, and 5 to 7 other great geek culture items. You can get your subscription started today and get an extra gift in your first box by going to geekfuel.com/wordballoon. That's geekfuel.com/wordballoon. Thanks again for listening. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Follow me at Twitter at @JohnWordBalloon or Facebook under my name, John Suntress. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2016. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thank you.